Today we're learning Nida Nun Zayin. We're going to start right at the top. We'll just quickly review some of the things in the Mishnah. So we were discussing things in the Mishnah that kutim are suspect, things that kutim are believed to do properly, and things that they differ in their opinions with us about. Okay, so now we're going to start with my darush. So Rashi says, it's a bit of a debate about what this question is, but we're asking, what's the approach of the kutim? What did they think? So where did they get this from? So Rashi says, where did they get what from? That they don't bury the Nifalim. Okay, they don't bury stillborns. Where did they get it from? Lo tasi gvul re'echa asher gavlu rishonim b'nachalatecha. Kol sheyesh lo nachala, yesh lo gvul. Kol sheyen lo nachala, en lo gvul. Okay, this is about, right, not to trespass into, or, you know, try to take over someone else's property. But in the Sifrei, they darshan this, that this has to do with selling your ancestral, your family's burial caves. You shouldn't sell a family burial cave that, you know, that someone's buried in already. Okay, if you have a family member buried, they purchased a burial cave, you're not allowed to sell it to anybody else. They learn that Gavul is actually talking about a burial plot. Okay, so now once you say Gavul is talking about a burial plot, so now came the Kutim, and they said, well, what do you see here? It says, Asher gavlu rishonim b'nachalatecha. They say, oh, there's a connection between a kever and a nachala. And therefore, they say, right, that's what, you get where they get it from, the Sifrei? Asher gavlu rishonim b'nachalatecha, right, that your ancestors already kind of used for their burial plot. But now they say, what do you learn from here? Only people who have nachala have gavul, meaning a kever. And anyone who doesn't have nachala doesn't get a kever. So Nifalim, who don't inherit at all, remember we learned about the dinim of Bechor and all that, that they don't get a they don't get any nachala, they're not considered for pishnayim and all that. It was never alive.
So it can't inherit.
Right, so it obviously can't inherit. So therefore, ein lo gvul. So now, there's an interesting thing here. This is all with the kutim darshan. So now what do we darshan? Because the stillborns, it's a very interesting question. There's a machloket among the mefreshim whether we actually, okay, whether it's true, okay, their drasha is accurate, and really we don't need to bury stillborns. Or, so some people say no. And then some people say we don't agree with the kutim and we bury stillborns. And others say that really they're right, and that by Torah law we actually don't have to bury stillborns, but it's midrabanan, they instituted that we bury stillborns. Now, everyone agrees that there's a difference between us and the kutim. They didn't bury and we buried. The question is, though, do we agree with their drasha and just disagree on a derabanan level, or do we disagree with their drasha entirely and say on a Torah level, which then becomes a big debate about whether burials of stillborns are d'oraita or derabanan. Again, not so much practical difference as far as I can tell, but it's an interesting thing about whether we agree with their drasha or not. And again, whether it's d'oraita or d'rabbanan. So now, going back to where they are trusted, ne'emanim lomar kavarnu. So we can believe them when they say there's somebody buried here, or there's nobody buried here. So now they say, v'ha le'luhu v'lifnei iver lo titei michshol. But they don't believe our belief of what is lifnei iver lo titei michshol, right? The pshat is, again, the kutim often disagree because they read things very literally. What does it mean? Lifnei iver lo titei michshol, don't put a stumbling block for a blind person. But we understand that that means don't trick anybody into doing an avera. But they're not trusted on that halacha, which means that how can we trust them to tell us there is someone buried there, there isn't someone buried there? They might be tricking us. And since they're not trustworthy, since they don't have that halacha, that you shouldn't trick people into doing something wrong, how do we trust them? So Amar Rabbi Avahu, b'kohen omed sham. It's a case where there was a kohen of the kutim who was going through he was standing right there. And then, it's not that he's telling you, and that he might trip, you know, make you make a mistake. It's that he himself, right, a kohen wouldn't go there if it was really tuma. Now he has something very interesting here. First of all, a kohen is not our kohenim. The kutim weren't from the Zera of Aharon. So obviously we're not talking about those kind of Kohanim. And here you have, again, their approach. What they said was that, well, the Kohanim of the Kutim, their own Kohanim, the people they call priests, kept the laws of Tumah and Taharah. And therefore, if they have one of their priests standing right there, we can trust that there's no kever there. So that's how we trust them, by actions they do and not by them telling us. Then they say, wait, just because you see a Kohen, right, you might misunderstand the situation. Doma Kohen Tameu, maybe he's a Tamei Kohen. And they think, now, if we have a Kohen who becomes Tamei Lameit, we don't say, oh, you can go be, again, Tamei Lameit. But maybe, you know, they're not so careful about that. And maybe they think mistakenly that once Kohen's Tamei, he can go and walk where a Kever is. So what do they say? Don't worry. Did not get Truma B'yadeh. The case is you see a Kohen and he's holding Truma. B'dilma Truma Tamehi, but maybe the Truma's already was disqualified. Maybe the Truma was Tame'ah, in which case, you know, the fact that he's holding Truma doesn't prove anything. Dika achel mina. No, he's eating from the Truma. Now, he wouldn't eat from Truma if it was disqualified. You're supposed to burn Truma that's disqualified, you know, that's impure. So therefore, if you see, again, we've now narrowed it. The only way you could trust a Kuti that the place isn't Tame is if he's walking in that area and he's holding Truma in his hand and he's eating it while he's walking there, so or standing there. So then they say, well, Ihachi Maila Memra, what's the chidush? I mean, isn't this quite obvious that if you see a guy, a Kohen, Kuti, eating Truma right there, wouldn't it be obvious? How you know it's Truma that he's eating, I don't know. But Mahu Detema Lo Bekiyeh B'Yitzira Kamashmanan. Now, you might have thought that they're not Bekiyeh. If you remember, we have this whole thing about what the age that the Nephel becomes, right, that it has to be developed 40 days in order to be considered something that needs all the halachot, right, that carries tumah, it won't be even tameh if it's under 40 days. Maybe they're not careful about that, and maybe they're not careful about the exact age, and maybe they think that once it's beyond 40 days, it's also not considered anything, and therefore, maybe there really is a nephel that's already 40 days, buried there, maybe you'd have to worry about that, kamash malan, that you don't. Okay. Next case, and this is going to be a very similar structure, nemanim ala beima, about whether it had a firstborn or not yet. So again, how do we trust him? Maybe they're tripping us up. He's shearing it and working with the animal, which means that we know that it's not a bechor because he would treat it properly. Remember, bechor is sanctified and you can't do gizav avodah. So what's the chiddush then? If we see him working the animal or shearing it, then we obviously know. So again, very similar to the previous one. Remember, there was a whole discussion, or I don't know, it was just a halacha about how you know when something that comes out of an animal is a miscarriage. And they said it's when it's mitunaf, right? It's all dirty, this dirty discharge. Then maybe they don't know exactly what is considered a nephel, you know, or a birth, right? An actual birth that miscarried by an animal, and therefore maybe they wouldn't know exactly when it's a bechor or not, and therefore, kamashmalan, they tell you, no, 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 it's fine, we can trust them. Nemanim al tziyun. This is tziyun kvarot, right? If there's a burial plot there. Va'af agav demi derabanan hu. But the whole din of putting up a kever, like a marker in the kever, is a derabanan halacha. And therefore, right, if it's derabanan, generally they're not trusted. Kevan dechtiva mizhar zihirebe. Now they say, since it's written in the books, we'll see where it's written in a minute, see it's written in Yechezkel, it's something they are careful about. Okay, this is interesting in terms of development of Torah Shebaal Peh. Things that were very early developments that were still mentioned in the Mishnah, they were mentioned in the Nevi'im, the Kutim were still careful about those things. It was the later things that developed that they disagreed with. How do we know this? Dichtiv, v'ra'a etzem adam u'bana etzlo tziyun. Okay, it's a pasuk in Yechezkel, and here you see they put up tziyun kvarot in those days, so therefore we can trust them on that. Aval ein nemanim lo ala schachot v'ala pra'ot. We said we were going to get to this in the Gemara, what they are. Schachot itnan, says in the Mishnah, Olo, elu hen schachot, ilan ha-mesach ala aretz. Schachot are trees that go, kind of branch out. There's branches going in different directions. And we're not sure there's a suffix, tuma, under one of the branches. And kind of they create like an ohel over the mate. So we don't know exactly which branch, so they're not ne'eman to tell us, under this branch, there's nothing. Okay, we can't trust them for that. Why? Because we're very careful about suffix tuma, and they're not careful about suffix tuma. So they might just say, oh, it's suffix, don't worry about it, you can use it. And we only go, we say, oh, it's only fine, it's not, not use it, but it's not tameh. We will only say it's not tameh if we know vadai, it's not tameh. But if it's suffix, we won't go by that. Pra'ot, what are pra'ot? Titznan, avanim pra'ot hayotzot min hagader. This is if you have a fence, and jutting out of the fence are these big stones. So if there are these big stones attached, I think of it more, less than a fence, but a brick wall. Not a brick wall, a stone wall. You can have stone, these stones, right, these perches, right, coming out of it. So, if again, it's the same idea. You have a bunch of them jutting out, and they're not neaman to say, under this one there's a dead body, and under that one there isn't. Okay, we don't trust them, because again, it's safek tumah. Beit hapras, amar Rav Yehuda, amar Shmuel, amar Rav Shmuel, menapech adam beit hapras v'holech. If you get to a beit hapras, again, it's a place, we're going to discuss a little more in detail in the continuation, but it's a field where there was a dead body. Then someone plowed the field. What happens when you plow a field when there's a dead body? Well, all the bones get crushed up and kind of strewn, right, scattered all around. We'll talk about how big a space do we assume. How wide does it get scattered? And then that whole area now, instead of just the area where the dead body was buried, the whole area is going to be considered safek tumah. So what do you do if you want to walk through this field and you're a kohen? So you blow in front of you, because what's the concern? That there's teeny little bone pieces that are bigger than a barley, but, you know, not smaller, and therefore they're metameh. So you blow on as you're walking, so as to, you know, the assumption is they're light, and they'll kind of move in front of you, and you won't end up walking on them. Sounds like an interesting way to walk. So that's how you walk through. Rav Yehuda bar Ami, mishmeta Rav Yehuda amar, beit hapras shenidash tahor. So he says, if a lot of people trampled on it, then you can assume it's tahor, because what? If it's like a very busy thoroughfare, let's say, and people are always walking through, and after a certain point, any bones that were there are going to be crushed up into teeny pieces, and they won't be the size of a barley anymore. Another halacha about beit hapras. B'tana ha-choresh beit ha-kvarot. Somebody plows in a cemetery, or if there's any, this is really any kind of kever there, even if it's just one, harei ze ose beit hapras. So it turns it into a beit hapras. Va'ad kama, how big a space? Hu ose melo ma'ane, as long as the size of a furrow. Mea ama, which is 100 ama, beit arba'at se'in. Okay, the assumption is it's 100 ama by 100 ama, okay, so 10,000 squared amot is the space that we assume where you can also grow four se'ah. They're just giving us another way of measuring it. Four se'ah of barley. Rabbi Yossi Omer Chamesh, he says actually five se'in, which is going to be 12,500 square amot. We can assume that this, wherever this grave was, right, it can go, once you start plowing, it kind of goes everywhere, and it could go into this big space. So then you end up with a beit hapras that size. Debate about exactly what size it would be. Now we say, v'lo mehemne, why isn't a kuti meheman? V'hatani, why isn't he believed? Sadesh avab bakever. We say if there's a field where you're not sure where the kever is, ne'eman kuti lomar ein sham kever. Okay, he's trusted to say there is no kever there. Lefi she'eino me'id ela al gufo shel kever. In other words, he's testifying about something that's deoraita, which is a dead body is metame meit. So if he says there's no kever there, and therefore this isn't a beit hapras, he should be believed. Or ilan shumesech la'aretz, ne'eman lomar, ein taftav kever, lefi she'eino me'id, ela al gufo shel kever. So here we see, in other words, yes, it's true that now we're talking about safek case, but the root of it is there a kever, is there not a kever? So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, b'mahalech uba al p'nei kula. He's ne'eman in a case where he, it's not that he told us, because if he told us, that would be ne'eman, because he's not ne'eman on the f'nei ver lo titeh mechshol, and he might be trying to trip us up. But if he actually walked in the entire, every single area in that field, then we can trust him that there's no kever. Okay? In other words, if he walks a straight line, and there's this area and that area, he's not ne'eman, because, right, there's safek on either side. But if he walked in the whole, this is again about sveiko. Sveiko means, well, you know, I don't care. I'm walking here because I can assume it'll be there and there. That means I don't care about sveiko because I'm just walking through and I'm assuming I'll just make my path and I'll just assume that it's on either side of me. And I didn't pass over that. But if he walks in every single area, then he's believed to say, it's clear there's no kever here because I've walked the entire space of the field.
No, they're just really struggling with this because some of their claims are real and some aren't real. How can you, if the bones are scattered, the bone pieces are scattered all over, they're not going to clear a specific path, small path where there wouldn't be. And also when
no, but again, we don't know where the bones are scattered. It's all suffix. So he, what we're saying here is if he walks the entire field, then it's obvious it's not even a beit hapras.
Okay, but earlier when they said that one of the rabbis said that if he would blow in front of him as he walked, that's also, like, really, wind blows stronger than we would blow So right. You can say a windblown field is already kosher in that case. So.
No, but a windblown field, it blows everywhere. No, you want to make sure that the area that you're about to walk through doesn't have it.
Yeah,
so you start blowing. It's a little bit hard to imagine how the guy's actually blowing, you know, as he's walking. I find that hard.
You can see that they're struggling.
Yeah. Look, these are all spekel cases. Spekel cases are always struggles, how we deal with it. So Rabbi Yochanan basically says, don't worry about these two sources. The one that says that he's believed is when he's walked the entire area where he's clearly testified there is no kever here at all. That we can believe him about. So then they say, Ihachi Mailamemra, then what's the chiddush? If obviously you walk the entire field, then obviously there's no kever. You don't even need to say anything. It's like the cases we saw before. So again, what's the concern? Mao ditema ritsua nafka kamashmanan. Okay, now. But they're saying like this. There's a field. Okay? Now, then maybe, now we might not know about it, but maybe there's a little ritsua on the side, a little strip that kind of branches out from the main area of the field. Now, if he walks through the entire field, this kuti, and he's a Kohen, right? This is all if he's a Kohen, we assume. Then, if he walked through the entire field, there must not be a kefir. But remember, what did we say about Kutim? They don't really care about Sefik. They'll say, I'll walk here as long as I can claim that the Kever is somewhere else. So now, just because he walks in the entire field might not mean that there's no Sefik anywhere, because it could be there's some little strip that comes out of the field that is still considered technically the field, but we don't know about it. And maybe the Kuti walked in the entire field claiming, oh, maybe the Kever's in that little strip. And maybe you think you have to worry about the possibility of that, Kamash Malan, that you don't have to worry about. If you walk the entire field, it's fine. Okay? And again, so now we have the Braita, which said, if he walks the entire field, it's fine, versus our Mishnah, which said, if he goes through a Beit HaPras, and that would have to be, he kind of makes a path within the Beit HaPras, but he doesn't walk in the entire thing, where he, you know, where he says, there's no problem, then we're not going to trust it. Zehaklal, last thing before we finish this parak, the Mishnah had said, this is the klal. Davar shechashudim bo ein ne'emanim alav. Right, if they're suspect that they don't keep these halachot, like safek tuma, then we're not going to allow to trust them. So zakla latuyemai. What's that coming to include? What case? Because we already gave the cases. Why do you need to add? What does this add? Latuyetchumin v'yenesach. That means that they're not ne'eman to say where does tchum shabbat go. Remember, tchum shabbat is 2,000 amah outside the city, or in every direction, or from wherever point you decided. I'm going to be here for Shabbat, right? This is my place. You have 2,000 amah in every direction. They're not ne'eman on this halacha because it's halacha derabanan. They're not makpid on it. And they're not makpid on yenesef, non-Jew touching your wine. So therefore, since they're not makpid on it, they're not trustworthy to say, oh, no non-Jew came in contact with it. Or if you see them drinking the wine, you can't assume that a non-Jew didn't come in contact with it. Hadran alach damanida. Now we're moving on to dinei ketamim, spotting. Haro'ah ketem al basara. So now a woman sees blood on her body. Depending on where you find the blood, it's going to affect whether it's a ketem that's problematic, right? Just because you see blood on your body doesn't necessarily mean it came from the uterus. So kenege beta torfa, if it's by your vagina, then tmea. Shalo kenege beta torfa, tora. If it's not in that area, then you're tora. But now they're not going to just say, right? They're going to give some descriptions here. Ala keva, if it's on your ankle, varosh godala, or on your big toenail, then you're tmea, because the assumption is, right, the blood drips down, it can get to that area. Al shoka, if it's on your thigh, va'al parsoteha, or on your feet, mi bifnim tmea, mi bachutz teora. On the inner side, it's tmea, on the outer side, it's tmea, right, teora, it's not a problem. Alat stadin, now you would have thought stadim is that, but it's not. Stadin means on the front or the back, okay, mikan umikan, on the front of your leg or on the back of your leg, tehora. Okay, so only on the inside are we going to assume that it comes from there. Rata chaluka, what if she sees on her robe? Minachagor lamata, from the belt down, tmea, right, meaning from the waist down, we're going to assume it's tmea. Minachagor lamala, tehora. Ratal beit yad shel chaluk. What if she finds on the sleeve? Im migia kenege beit ha-torfa. If the sleeve is long enough, that I guess what they assume is maybe she could like sit on her hand or something, and the sleeve gets down there, then you'd say tmea v'im lav. And if you can't get that far down, then tehora. Haytapo shatito u'bitkasavo balayla. Let's say she takes off her cloak, And she sleeps with it at night like a blanket. Again, we talk about recycling. You know, here we talk about they didn't have enough clothes. They sometimes slept with their clothes they wore during the day. They used it as blankets. Then, well, then, any place, because at night people move around and the blanket moves around and it could be anywhere. Mepneshu chozer, right, because it moves around. Also, if she took her mitpachat, her kerchief, and she slept with it, it would be the same thing, right? Obviously, a kerchief, if you see blood, we're not going to assume it came from there. But if she sleeps with it, and then she finds it, I assume also they mean you slept with it, then you put it in your hair, and then later you found a blood spot. Since you had slept with it previously, we have to assume that the blood could have come from there. Okay. Now, so we have this all about ketem. Now, this just seems you have a spot, not like you have a flow, not like you felt anything coming out. So Gemara immediately quotes Shmuel, which seems to disagree with our Mishnah. We're only going to get to the very end of the daf, the connection between Shmuel and our Mishnah. Amar Shmuel, badka karka olam v'yashva alav. If she checks the ground, meaning there's nothing on it, no blood, then she sits down, umatzah dam aleha, and then she finds blood on her, tehora, we're going to write on the ground. Then she's tehora, shene'amar b'vsara, ad shetargish b'vsara. She's not going to be tmea because she didn't feel anything. She just sees some blood there. Seeing blood isn't anything because the Torah says, Isha ki tiezava, right, if she has a flow, dami yezova bivsara, has to be in her basar. He understands bivsara means that you feel it inside. Okay? So unless you feel it, it's not tamei. Now this is a very important halacha in Hochot Nidah because according to Shmuel, okay, we'll see, I'll kind of give away the punchline of today, which is that Shmuel basically holds that this is nida d'oraita is only if you have a hargasha, and if not, it's all nida d'rabbanan. Okay, if you didn't feel anything. Now, what are you supposed to feel? What is this feeling? So, interestingly, right, the rabbis didn't know what they meant by hargasha, okay, because it's not something that they personally feel. There's many different opinions about what this is. The Rambam says, hirgisha gufa v'nizdaza. She had some shake, like some shudder in her body. That's the hargasha that we're talking about. The No Debi Yehuda says, "Hargashat zivat davar lach." She feels some liquid, moist something coming out. Okay, now coming out of where? So you might think, "Oh, well, that okay." I could think maybe that happens, right? You might feel something coming out of your body, but no. You have to feel it coming out of your uterus because that's where it matters. It doesn't matter if you feel something coming out of your vagina. That's not where blood is problematic. It's problematic when it comes out of your uterus. So you'd have to feel something coming out of your uterus. The Chatam Sofer disagrees with him and says, no, you have to feel that your uterus opens. Okay, so there's a debate about what this hargasha is. I can tell by your faces, and my feeling has always been that most women do not feel any of those sensations when they start getting their period. And in which case, it sounds like, according to Shmuel, right, and again, depending on how you understand Shmuel and what hargasha is, but first of all, maybe women in those days did feel these things. Maybe they didn't. Not clear, right? People, it could be they were much more in touch with their bodies. Were so distracted by so by so many things that I think we're definitely less in touch with our bodies than they were. Maybe there are women who are more in touch with their bodies and do feel these things. Anyway, what exactly hargasha is a good question. You know, the Rambam, by the way, might be the most logical, because what does it mean you feel a shudder? I think it's just anything that goes. Some women know they're getting their period. They could just tell by either cramp or something like that. Maybe that's what he means. Maybe saying in words that we maybe wouldn't define, cramps or some sort of sign of something that your period's coming. Maybe. Anyway, according to this, basically women wouldn't be in nida d'oraita without any of these hargashot. So if you don't feel any of these things, potentially maybe you're not nida d'oraita, unless, and this is halachically, there's always this issue, which is there's certain times where blood comes out and some other activity is going on down there, like urinating or having sexual relations, where you couldn't possibly have felt the hargasha because you felt something else. Actually, it's going to come up in our sugya today in a little bit of a different direction, but that's why I wanted to mention it now, which is those cases you're going to be in nida d'oraita because since there could have been hargasha, but you couldn't even tell, even though maybe theoretically we can't tell ever, but because of that, we're more machmir in those situations. Okay, so anyway, that's his halacha. So now they say, first of all, we have a problem with your halacha because we've already used the word bivsara to darshan other things. Hai bivsara mibayale shemitama bifnim kibachutz. That's the blood, if you remember, is tame even if it's inside your body. If it left the uterus but didn't leave your body yet, you're still tamea, as opposed to, remember, in the man, it's only mitame when it comes out. Im ken, so what do they say? Lemakra, babasar, my bibsara, shmamina, achtogish bibsara. Okay, we can learn, if it just said bibasar, then we would have learned inside, right, in her flesh. But because it says bibsara, hers, that includes both drashot. But then they say, there's a third drashah, akatemi baile bibsara, velobashvir, velobachaticha. Remember, that means it has to touch her flesh, not if there's blood inside. A shvir, right, is a sack, right, or a piece, right? If a piece of something comes out of her body and it's full of blood, if the blood is on the inside, right, but it doesn't touch her body, she's not going to be tmeah. So what do they say? Tarte shmami now. We can understand, I think the way I understand this is the two drashot that we brought from the outside, that it's mitama inside, but only if it's touching your body, those are really one and the same. In other words, it's inside your body, but only if it's touching your body and not if it's inside something else. So therefore, we can darshan them all. Okay, now we're going to bring a slew of braitot that seem to go against Shmuel about the hargasha, because we're going to see that women are tmeot, even though there wasn't a hargasha. Tashma, ha'isha shi'osat tzracheha. A woman is urinating. Okay, I told you we're going to get back to this. V'ra'ata adam, and she sees blood in her urine. Rabbi Meir omer, im omedet tmeah, v'im yoshevet teora. We saw this already. If she's standing and urinating, right, it would be odd a woman would be doing that, but if she's standing and urinating, then we're going to assume that the dam is nida blood, or uterine blood. V'im yoshevet, if she's sitting and urinating normally, she's teora, we're not going to assume it came from the uterus. Hechi dami, what's the case here? Ida argasha, if she had a hargasha and felt something, then yoshevet amai teora, she should be tmeah, right? Because she had a hargasha according to Shmuel. El alav, it must be delo argasha. She didn't feel anything. And then we have to explain, bekatane omedet tmeah. And then, so now what happens? What did we say? If she's standing, she's tmeah, even though she didn't have a hargasha. That goes against Shmuel, because look, Shmuel said, you have to have a hargasha. This woman clearly didn't have a hargasha. Otherwise, sitting would also be a problem. So what does the Gemara explain? No la olam de argasha. She really did have a hargasha. V'imor, but what's the problem? She felt something, but what's the problem? She also urinated at the same time. V'imor hargasha me'raglayim havai. So she's not sure if the hargasha she felt was because she was urinating, or was the hargasha that the blood was coming out. Again, you see that there was confusion a little bit about these sensations that the woman's feeling. What exactly is it? So, since it's a suffix, so now it's going to depend on the situation. If she's omedet, and this, by the way, is going to be the same structure for the following braitot also. If she's standing, we assume, now, okay, here, I'm not exactly sure how this works, physiologically, but they're going to say like this. If a woman's standing, why is she standing and urinating? Because she has to go really badly, okay? And she can't manage to find a place to sit. So if she's standing, and she has to go so badly, we can assume that hadur meraglayim lamakor va'ayte dam, that what happened? Because she had to go so badly, the urine had kind of gone back up, passed by the uterus, and brought back the dam from the uterus. Again, I'm not exactly sure how that happens, but that's what they say. V'yoshevet tehora. But if she's yoshevet and going normally, then we're going to assume that it didn't come from the makor, and therefore, okay, so again, we assume there was a hargasha because this, but the hargasha doesn't necessarily mean the blood was coming from the uterus, if there's no reason to think the blood was coming from the uterus, meaning if she was just sitting down and urinating normally. Next source, tashma. Aid shayana tun tacharaka. She has an aid, a badika cloth, that she checked herself, and now it's underneath her pillow. Benim tsa'alav dam. So now she finds blood on it. Im agol, if it's round, tahor, she's not tameh. V'im mashuch, if it's long, like rectangular shape, tameh. So hey chidami. Again, we're going to have the same thing. Idar gisha, if she felt something, she had this sensation, agol amai tahor. Why would it be tahor just because it's round? El alav delo argisha. It must be she didn't have any sort of feeling. Vikatane mashuch tameh. And what do you see here? If it's long, it's tameh. Hargash, no hargasha. And yet it's tameh. So the Gemara says, lo, la'olam de argisha. It must be she did have a hargasha. V'imor hargashat eid havai. But what happened? While she was doing a bedika, right, again, this is another case. I forgot to mention this one earlier. It's not only, right, urinating, having sexual relations, and when you do an internal check. When you do an internal check, because you're doing something there, it might be that you would miss a hargasha. So now you might say the hargashat eid havai, and therefore, mashuch, If it's elongated, then we're going to assume vaday migufa ata. It clearly came from her body, and then we can assume what she felt was actually that. But if it's agol, which wouldn't be the shape that you would assume that you'd see on a bedikah cloth, then it's going to be tahor. Again, I'm not sure. Right? Rashi says, derech kinuach liyom hashuach. Right? When you wipe yourself, generally it's going to end up with like a long shape. I don't know if it's exactly true, but that's what they're assuming. Tashma. Another source, same issue. Now we're going to get into the sexual relations. Nimtzal shelo. After having sex, what would we do in those days, right? If you were dealing with tarot, he would check and she would check. So we've been through the source before. Nimtzal shelo. If he finds on his bedikah cloth, tmein v'chayavi b'korban. They both become tamei. She, because she must have been a nida and the blood is coming from her, right? This is even if a few minutes passed, because obviously the blood came from her body at the time they were having sex, and their chayav, and he becomes tamei because he's a bo'al nida, who becomes tamei, and they have to bring a korban because b'shogeg they slept with each other while they were having sex. While she was in nida, exactly. Nimtzal shela atyom. If she finds on her own bedika immediately after, tmeim b'chayavim korban, same thing. Nimtzal shela la'acharzman, but if she waits a little bit, then tmeim misafek, they're only tmeim misafek, uptu'im in a korban. They don't have to bring a korban. So again, hechidami. What's the case? We're now only focusing on her. Ida argisha la'acharzman amai p'tu'im min a korban. Right? If she had a hargasha, then why are you going to be exempt from a korban? El alav delo argisha. It must be she didn't have any hargasha. V'katani nimsal shala atyom tmeim v'chayavim korban. So here you see again, no hargasha, and yet she's tmeah. So again, the Gemara answers, lo la'olam darigisha ve'ema hargashat shama shava. Right, again, we can assume she did have a hargasha, but it could be that she was also having sex at the time and therefore couldn't distinguish between the sensations. And therefore, we don't know, right? So therefore, we're going to assume if it's immediate, we'll assume that her hargasha connects with the blood. And if it wasn't immediate, then we can assume not. Okay, Tashma, another source. This is our last source. Nimseta taomer shlosha sfekot b'isha. Okay, this is our last source for today. So, there's three types of sfekot in a woman. Now we're going to get off in this long source, which we're going to then go back to the beginning, because the beginning is going to seem to totally contradict our mission. Al basara, if she finds blood on her basara. Okay, let's just review. The Mishnah said, if you find blood on your body, or on your cloak, or whatever you're wearing, it's going to depend where you found it. This source doesn't say that. This source, if you find it on your basar, on your body, safek tamei safek tor, you're not sure if it was uterine blood or not, tamei, we're going to judge you as tamei'ah. Al chaluka, if you find it on your clothes, safek tamei safek tor, and you're not sure, tahor, she's going to be tohra. That definitely doesn't agree with our Mishnah. We'll get back to this. Uvemaga'ot uvehesetot halachacha harov. If a woman touched something or moved something, and we don't know if she's a nida or not, we're going to go by the rov. So first we're going to deal with the last line, then we'll get back to the beginning line. My halacha chara rov. What does it mean? We go by the rov. Lav does not mean im rov yameh tmeim tmeah va'af agav delo argasha. Doesn't this mean, and then it'll contradict Shmuel, it means if we see a random woman in the shuk, someone we know, I guess, because or we have to check, she touched something, or she came into your house, she touched something in your house, do we assume it's tmeah or not? Well, it depends. Is this a woman who bleeds most of the month? Or is this a woman who doesn't bleed most of the month? If she bleeds most of her days, then we'll assume it's tamei. If not, not. And then, doesn't that seem to imply even if she didn't have a hargasha? Right? Because we're just going by what we assume. Clearly, she didn't have a hargasha, otherwise we'd know. So they say, lo, right, obviously you have to assume in this their society, because of Tumen Tara, people knew these facts and these details about people, right? Our world, we're always so careful about, you know, not knowing, not talking about, is someone having their period or not, or I don't know, people are, you know, in those days, everybody had to know. It was very obvious. We even talked about the Beit HaTumot yesterday, right? The women would hang out in certain areas when they had their period. So it was obvious to people what people's status was. So what did they answer? Lo, im rov yameh b'hargasha chazya tme'ah, de'imor argasha v'lava data. What it means here is, if most of the time she sees blood with a hargasha, then this time, even if she saw without a hargasha, we can assume, this is also just an interesting fact about people, when something happens so frequently, sometimes you don't even pay attention to it anymore. So if she doesn't remember that she had a hargasha, but she's bleeding, we can assume, since most of the time she bleeds, she has a hargasha, we can assume that she had some sensation and she just didn't pay attention to it. Okay, so we've resolved that issue with Shmuel. But now we have to go back and understand this Mishnah in general. Amar Mar, Al b'sara safek tameh, safek tahor tameh. Al chalukah safek tameh, safek tahor tahor, heichidami. What's the case? Imi chagor lamata, if it's from the bottom, right, from the middle of her robe, you know, from the waist down, al chalukah amai tahor, why should it be tahor? V'hatnan, doesn't it say in our Mishnah, min chagor lamata tameh, right, from the bottom down, she's from the waist down, she's tameh. V'imi chagor lamala, and if it's from the top part of the chaluk, amai tameh. Now, this is on b'sara. Al b'sara, sorry, I think I skipped the words. Imi chagor lamala al b'sara, right? If it's from the waist up on her body, why does it say safek on your body tameh? V'hatznam ra'ta adam al b'sara shelo kenega beta torfa to'ora. Or he says in our Mishnah, if it's on the upper part of your body, you're to'ora. So, ibayt ema michagor lamata, ibayt ema michagor lamala. We're going to explain the cases in this braita both ways. Okay, you can explain it both ways. Ibayt ema, you could read it as it's all talking about michagor lamata, from the waist down. What would be the case? Kigon sha, now we want to find a case again where on her basar it will be tameh, and on her chagor it will be tahora. On her chaluk it will be tahora. Kigon shavra b'shuk shel tabachim. She went into a big market where they were slaughtering animals. Al b'sara, if it's on her skin only, migufa ata, it must come from her body. Why? Di'ime alma, so if it came from outside, al chalukah mebaile ishtekuche. It would have been found al chalukah, right? In other words, think about it. She's walking through the shuk, and all she ends up with is blood on her body. Well, if it was coming from the shuk, it would have gotten on her cloak. If it's al chalukah, right? So you have to understand that al b'sara and al chalukah means exclusively on her basar or exclusively on her chaluk. If it's al chalukah only, then me'almate must be coming from the outside. Dimi gufata al basara mebaile ishtekuche. It came from her body, right? She's walking through the shuk. She has just on her chaluk and not on her body. It doesn't make sense. It would go straight to her chaluk and not on her body at all. That's if we read it as chagor lamata. And now the opposite logic. Ibayt ema mechagor, in the same logic, but the opposite case. You can also read it that we're talking about from the upper part of her body. Kigon de izdarka al basara. So, I'm sorry, de izdarka. De izdakha. Okay, what happened? She flipped upside down. Okay, now, if it's al basara, if it's only on her flesh, then vadai migufa atai. Dime alma atai, because if it came from the outside, al chalukai ba'ale eshtekuche, right? She would have found it also in her chaluk. If it's al chalukah when she flipped upside down, we have to assume me'alma ate didn't come from her. It must have come from something external. Because if it came from her body, you would have found it on her body and not only on her chaluk. Okay, that was all to explain how that braita worked in with our Mishnah. But now, that part of the braita itself is also a question on Shmuel. Because what does it say? Katane miyat al basara safek tameh safek taor tameh. It says if you find it on her body only, she's going to be tameh. Now clearly there was no hargasha v'af agav de lo hirgisha. Ve'od, and furthermore, look at our Mishnah. Tnan, it says in our Mishnah, ha'ro'ah ketem al basara kinege beta tofra tameh v'af agav de lo hirgisha. I already told you this answer, which is, right, how does Shmuel work in with our Mishnah and with this Braita, which seems to say, k'tamim, which come without any sort of hargashot, any sort of sensation, are problematic. So, Amar Rav Yirmiyah midifti, mode Shmuel shehi tmei'a midirabanan. Shmuel agrees that this woman will be tmei'a midirabanan. In other words, like I said from the beginning, you need to be d'oraita if you have a hargashah, and if not, you don't have a hargashah, then we go into the realm of ketamim, and then you're going to be nida midrabanan. Okay, so or if you see blood coming out without any sort of sensation, then you'll be nida midrabanan according to Shmuel. Okay, and this is, like I said, it's a very basic halacha. It's what I mean. In general, we saw anyway that ketamim were all derabanan. Here we see it inside what they say explicitly. Right, even Shmuel who says hargasha is necessary, it's only necessary in a doraita level, but derabanan level, even without a hargasha, you're going to be considered nida.